morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's RTPB call on Tuesday the 27th of July, we have Michaela Nalon, James Bladel, Mikey O'Connor, Michael Collins, Barbara Steele, Barry Cobb, Bob Mountain, Anil George, Paul Diaz. From staff we have Marika Konings and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We have apologies from Matt Serlin, and if I could please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. We also seem to have Boudoir Chambé on mute. I will just double check if he is actually on the call. Thank you. Over to you, Michaela.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Let's try and keep this all nice and tight today. I'm going to run through the agenda really, really quickly. Let's do the simple things first. As previously discussed ad nauseum, we have extended the deadline for public comments until the 8th of August. So anybody who wishes, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just want to follow up on a discussion we had on the last meeting concerning public comments that actually forwarded discussions on other mailing lists and included comments by people that might not have requested to be inserted in the public comment forum. So I did check this with legal counsel, and they basically indicated that hasn't happened before. That at this stage there is no real problem, as there's still the discretion for staff to summarize comments and then take from there what is deemed relevant and appropriate. However, if anyone that is included in those postings would request ICANN for those posts to be removed, we probably would need to do so. And just noting that I think in the meantime, the person who submitted those postings as attachments has now posted those as well as part of an email, and I think including just his comments. So the issue might have resolved itself in any event.
Okay, thanks, Marika.
Okay.
And as I was saying, we've extended the deadline until the 8th of August. I'll come back to 3 and 4. The fifth item on the agenda was our next meeting. As previously discussed, we are not going to be holding meetings for the following 2 weeks. However, if anybody wants to continue discussions about any of the charter questions, the mailing list, of course, will not be on holiday, and of course, you can do so there. Any issues with either of those 2 points? Okay. Right then. Going back further, Charter Issue D. Talking about registrar lock statuses. Has anybody got any further thoughts on registrar lock statuses? Don't all rush. Michael Collins, go ahead.
Thank you, Michaela. I'm sorry I missed last week's meeting, and I really wanted to respond to some comments that I heard on the recording that I listened to. I have historically not been that bothered by this issue, but I think that I've certainly heard some comments, and we all realize that George was quite concerned about this issue. And I think he did bring up one point that we didn't address well, and that's that if we leave this at the discretion of the registrar, are there limits to where that discretion should end? I think that as it's used today by the but the one example that we've used so many times before, I apologize, GoDaddy, but, 60 days doesn't seem, it seems inconvenient at times, but doesn't seem to be terribly intrusive. But I'm concerned that, 60 days is okay. What about 120 or 360? And should we address that? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody have any thoughts or comments, reactions? Okay, Michael Collins again. No?
Sorry.
Okay.
That was an accident.
Do you want to add anything, Michael? Bob Mountain, go ahead.
No, that.
Yeah, I think I may have made this point last week, but our perspective is that the things like transfer locks are at the, with all of our registrar partners, it's left to the registrar to determine, whether or not they implement a lock and what the duration of the lock is. That seems to work quite well, leaving it to their discretion. Some registrars choose to have a lengthy lock of, up to 180 days. And others choose a lesser amount, the 60-day, for instance, has not been an issue for us. So, our perspective is registrar discretion, and flexibility on the duration seems to be working just fine. Thank you.
Okay. Does anybody else have any thoughts on locks? James?
Yeah, McKaylee. Thanks, James speaking. And I agree that there is discretion, some degree of discretion is advised. And I think it really depends upon the nature of the service. In this particular case, we're discussing a voluntary opt-in service. There are other services, for example, that include indefinite locks, so long as the service is in place. For example, a privacy or proxy service might have an indefinite lock, or a service that is specifically designed to protect against transfers may have an indefinite lock, so long as that service is active and is not canceled by the registrar. So I think that to some extent your concern, Michael, is already occurring in the industry, but what I would point out is that they're, so long as they're chosen by the consumer, that and the consumer is aware and is seeking out those types of locks, I think that's not something that necessarily ICANN should prescribe to change.
Michael, you have your hand up.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. I think that all of the examples that you gave there, James, which were good, all involved services that could be ended at the discretion of the registrant. And the lock that we're talking about based on a registrant change is something that there may be discretion at the time the registrant change occurs, but it's difficult to remove the lock afterwards. So in the extreme example that George brought up, if someone volunteered for a 50-year lock, is that something that would be satisfactory? That seems like an extreme example, but what would be excessive? Thanks.
And just to respond, I would think that, and this is more of a practical observation, that the longer the lock that's involved, the more likely that someone will want to cancel it, cancel the associated service midterm. So, for example, a 60-day lock, we don't see a lot of folks wanting to cancel that midterm, but if there were some hypothetical 50-year lock, then yes, I could see where that would be more frequent. And also, I don't believe that it might be a question for some of the legal minds on the group, but I don't believe that a lock could, an associated product or service lock could extend beyond the term of the registration agreement. So that might be something to consider as well.
Thank you, James. Mikey?
Thanks, McKaylee. It's Mikey. This is just a question for James. So on the 60-day lock, if the registrant gets to you guys and says, hey, I'd like to not have the lock last 60 days, is it possible for them to remove it? I thought that was the root of George's, was that it couldn't be removed.
I think I'm going to have to check on this, Mikey. I think there is a way to have it removed earlier. I believe it involves a pretty rigorous establishment of one's identity. And we have a process involved. Let me look into that. I'll take that as a follow-up. But essentially, if someone can demonstrate that they are who they say they are, and they can demonstrate that they are indeed the registered name holder, then I think that we do consider removing that lock earlier.
This is Mikey again. I think that might be the crux of the issue. If, in fact, all of these locks, irrespective of how long they are, can, and you know, for the most part, be removed by the losing registrant, let's say, then, I don't know if there's really an issue there at all. Michael Collins, does that sort of address your issue to you?
Well, I think that in the example given by GoDaddy, I think that's fine, but I think that we're concerned with policy that is left to the discretion of the registrar. I don't think there's any obligation under current policy for GoDaddy to remove that lock.
Well, yeah, this is Mikey again. I guess that's the direction I'm headed, is that maybe we deal with two cases. One case is locks which can be removed by registrants, and the other case is locks which can't. Because I think that George is probably raising the issue about locks that cannot be removed by the losing registrant. You know, I mean, I'm sort of putting words in his mouth, but that would be my guess. And it might be that we want to split this into two kinds of things, so that in the case of locks where the losing registrant can remove them, I don't think there's anything troubling in there at all. And then maybe we could narrow down on the ones that are similar but cannot be removed by the registrant, and sort of tease away at that and see if there's anything in that. That's just my, you know, just in listening to the conversation, that's sort of what pops into my head anyway.
Thank you, Mikey. Paul, and then me. I'll put myself in the queue.
Thanks, Michele. Two things. To back up what James is saying, Network Solutions, if we put a lock in place because the process we have has flagged a transfer request as potentially fraudulent, the registrant is welcome to contact us, establish a bona fides, and the lock will be removed. And I can tell you that in the few instances where we have flagged a false positive, that is, we flagged a thing as a potentially fraudulent transfer, and in fact it was not, the registrants are always very, very happy with the process we have in place because they fully understand the security measures involved. And more often, the lock is there and it is protecting a legitimate registrant who is unaware of the transfer request. So, yes, the locks that we put in place can be removed as long as the individual establishes their bona fides. I'm just curious, please help me understand, though. We keep using a term, losing registrant. I'm sorry, what are we talking about there? What is a losing registrant?
Oh, this is Mikey, since I'm the one that injected it. That's just what I think of. It's not a term of art. You know, I'm thinking that presumably if there was fraud going on, there'd be a losing registrant and a gaining registrant. There'd be, you know, the person who used to have the name, and there'd be the new person. And so that's not an official term. That's just a Mikeyism.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
Sorry, Mike, just to clarify. Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Michele, please, go ahead.
No, I'm just trying. I'm just Mike McKaylee here. I'm just trying to understand what you're referring to. Are you referring to the original registrant, or prior to a change? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So regardless of the change being genuine or fraud, that's how you're viewing it.
Yeah, and probably it's better to use prior registrant rather than registrant.
No. I'm just, that's fine. It's just a case of just trying to understand what you're referring to. That's all.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Paul.
No, Michaela, you've just done it for me. I just wanted to be clear, Mikey, and to your point, then what I've just explained, Network Solutions does, is in fact the case that you would be the legitimate registrant. You contact us, you establish your bona fides, and the lock is removed so that, well, in this case, as you're describing it, you don't want the lock removed because some bad guy's trying to take your name.
Yeah, right. And I think that the point I was trying to make before I hosed everything up with that stupid term was the notion that if... I mean, I think what George is describing is a domainer who's doing a transaction and they want to move their domain and collect their money quickly. And the domainer crowd gets annoyed because there are these locks and they can't make their deal as quick. Well, if in fact they can remove the locks, then suddenly my interest level plummets because, like, well, fine, call your registrar and have them remove the lock and you're all good. If, on the other hand, there is a situation where the, you know, I mean, I still think this is mostly a problem that's restricted to domainers, but, you know, if there's a person who can't do their transaction and they can't remove the lock, I suppose that there's something to discuss there, although I'm still not that interested in it. But just to interject,
so you're saying in your primary interest, Mikey, would be if there is some kind of lock that cannot be removed.
Yeah, I think that's the only one that bears policy, because if it can be removed, then it's just a transaction between a registrant and their supplier, and, you know, I don't get excited about that at all. And it can be 250-year locks, as long as they can remove it. Who cares? But if it's one that they can't remove, then maybe there's a policy discussion to be had. But I think we'd have to frame it a little more.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. I've got a queue building up here. I'm just going to make two very quick comments as myself, Michele speaking. Personally, I'd agree with a lot of what other people have been saying about the idea of permission, that if there's a lock there that I can remove it, even if that requires establishing extra bona fides or whatever, well, so be it. The other thing is, and I've said this multiple times in the past, whether the lock's internal or whatever, for whatever reason, to make my life as the potential gaining registrar of a transfer that much easier, and to remove about 10 email exchanges, having the lock status, whatever the hell it's called, appearing in publicly accessible whois, would make my life, and I suspect other people's lives, significantly easier. Now, moving on, we have Michael Collins, Barbara Steele, and then James Bladell. Go ahead, Michael.
I just wanted to concur with what Mikey says. I think the concern is for locks that cannot be removed. They may be voluntary at the time they're entered into, but if they can't be removed and we have no policy that limits the time period and we have no policy that regarding, you know, being able to remove them, then I think there's reason for valid concern. And I think that there's also the possibility that in addition to not allowing a registrar change, that some registrars could, by this policy, also not allow a successive registrant change, and which would essentially lock the domain up with the registrant and not allow a change of registrants. And I will remind you, and especially Mikey, that there's... You know, there's a lot of buyers of domain names that are not domainers, and that's an important part of our domain industry, to be able to fulfill sales in the secondary market. Thanks.
Okay, Barbara, and then James.
Just for the record, I mean, I think that all registrars should have the option of putting in place services that allow a registrant, to protect their names by way of locking down their names. I guess I'm a little confused because I'm hearing about, throughout this discussion, a lock that cannot be removed. I mean, I think that's kind of the crux of what we're getting to here, is that, to the extent that a registrar elects to put into place, either because that's their policy, they're going to lock a name, for the first however many days, both from a no transfer as well as, a transfer change of registrant information. Yeah, I think that they need to make it very clear, either in their contract or in additional information that's provided to the registrant that is impacted by that lock, that, what the steps are, what's going to be required for them to be able to remove that. And I think that to the extent that that information is available and made available to the registrant, and the registrar is abiding by that process that is defined, that's repeatable, and it's something that the registrant can actually do, then I'm not really sure, what else there is to discuss. It's almost as though it's kind of like a fraud alert that you could have on your bank account that, you instruct the bank to not authorize anything on your bank account unless certain criteria are met. So that's my two cents.
Okay, thank you. James?
Bringing up the end of the queue here, I think a lot of what I wanted to say initially has already been touched on. If you are the registered name holder, I think that you can and should be able to remove the lock under most circumstances. I would say that if we start to codify that in policy, we might run up against some other policies, for example, the UERP, which does take, certain transfer prerogatives away from registrants. And then, Michele, to your point about displaying all those and who is, I mean, I get the general, gist of your comments, but or your concerns there, but the issue I would point out is that a lot of services would have accompanying locks, and so would you envision that there would be one registrar service-oriented lock displayed in Whois, and that all products would then engage or disengage that particular lock, or would you envision a separate lock for each service? Because I could see where that would get really unwieldy pretty quickly.
James, the minutiae of how it's actually implemented doesn't really concern me. Basically, what I want is a situation where somebody does a Whois lookup on a domain, and they can easily see the domain does not have the status of okay or whatever way it would appear when it's not locked. So there's something there's a lock on that domain of some kind, for whatever reason. If that's displayed as, internal registrar lock, possibly for whatever, I don't really care. It's just really a case of, it just removes this kind of thing where we have, we constantly see these emails going backwards and forwards where as the gaining registrar, we're expected to have some kind of all-seeing knowledge of things that we have no knowledge of because it's something that's set at the other registrar.
So client transfer prohibited does not serve that purpose.
Well, see, client transfer prohibited would come back, wouldn't come back as okay in Whois, would it?
I don't believe so.
That's the entire problem. See, the problem is that if you have a domain at present, okay, sorry to pick on GoDaddy, but you're leaving me no choice. If I transfer, if I have a domain that is recent undergone a recent change or a recent account change with GoDaddy, and let's say for argument's sake it's a .org or another one which is using a thick registry, in Whois the domain will appear as okay, and it will look as if it's not locked. So as far as the gaining registrar is concerned, they can't see any obvious reason why the domain cannot be transferred. But any transfer request will be rejected.
And just while you were discussing that, I pulled up one of my own .orgs from GoDaddy, and I see client transfer prohibited.
Yeah, but that's not one which is subject to your 60-day lock. That's one which is locked.
Mm.
Do you understand what I mean?
Maybe we should just have a longer discussion offline, because I guess I'm seeing that that lock exists, it is visible, and...
Yeah, but that's the difference is between a conscious lock that is being set by the registered name holder and an internal lock that's being set by the registrar. Because in the case of a lock being chosen by the registered name holder, it's appearing in Whois, and it's a non-issue. But in the case of the internal lock, based on our experience with them, it doesn't appear in Whois. The Whois does not give any indication that there is some kind of lock on the domain. Paul, and then Barbara.
Thanks, Michele. Just a very quick point. Discussion I'm having in the chat with Michael Collins, just to make sure it's in the record. We're talking about the, if you will, discretionary locks situations here. And since this is all about transfer policy, one lock that is in policy and is supposed to stand is that when a name has recently been transferred, that name is supposed to be locked for a 60-day period. That one is not open in a negotiation, at least for my registrar, if it's been transferred. Often, most often, even at the registry level, that is recognized, and if a subsequent transfer request is initiated, it won't go through. Unfortunately, sometimes it does, and those are the cases that we see with hijacking attempts, or not even attempts, with hijacking cases. I think everybody in the group agrees, but wanted to make it part of the record. We are not talking about the lock, the 60-day lock that is put in place when a transfer has already been processed. We're only discussing the other scenarios where registrars apply locks, correct?
That's my understanding anyway, Paul. I don't know if anybody else would disagree. Okay, Barbara, Chris, and then Michael Collins.
Just in follow-up to Paul's comments, I think that the 60-day lock after a transfer is a valid reason for the losing registrar to be able to deny the transfer request, and I think that it's well within, under the policy, the rights of a registrar to systematically restrict somehow on their end a transfer, but I don't know that it's not necessarily a hard and fast requirement the way I read it. I could stand corrected there. So if you disagree, please do let me know. But I do think it's just listed as a valid reason for denying a transfer. There is, at least at our registry, a restriction on transfers and a systematic restriction at that on the transfer of a domain name for 60 days after the initial registration. So I think it's kind of a fine distinction there. But question that I had for you, Michele, was a comment that you made, an internal lock. How do you go about affecting that? You wouldn't necessarily need to put a client transfer prohibited status on it in order to...
It means that you probably have something internal within your EPP software, whatever your EPP backend is. So anytime you see a request for that particular domain, I assume they're just rejecting it. They're knacking the request automatically. Because
okay.
You're going to see the request for the domain transfer coming into you anyway. So if you have some kind of internal, blacklist or block list or whatever, you can just, reject based on that.
And this is at the registrar.
Registrar.
Level? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think James put his hand up. Maybe he wants to answer that. I don't know what he wants to say. I can't read his mind.
I was trying to tell you that you're a fantastic person. No, this is a separate issue, so I'll just drop back to the end of the queue and let Barbara finish.
Okay. I mean, Barbara, to be honest, that's how I would do it if I wasn't going to put a lock in it, but I'm not a programmer. It's the kind of thing I could ask one of my programmers how they would do it, and I suspect that's what the kind of answer they'd give me, but I can't read their minds either, unfortunately. Actually, in some ways, it's probably actually a good thing, but we won't say any further about this. This call is being recorded. Chris, and then James.
Yes, Chris here. It was just to reiterate, the conversation's moved on a bit now, but just to reiterate or underline what you were saying, Michele, to from the business point of view, or a registrant, or an admin contact, not a registrar, that as much clear information about the lock in the WHOIS as possible is what we'd really like to see. Because, you know, when working as webmaster on behalf of clients, and when there's a problem with a transfer, or, you know, or a domain not working or something, then, you know, you're starting a Sherlock Holmes exercise, and as much information, obviously, is helpful, and wastes as little time as possible. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. James?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out an observation that some of what we're discussing is with internal locks or associated services that don't allow transfers. And some of this is an artifact of the mechanism by which a transfer is initiated at the new registrar as opposed to the current registrar of record. For example, one could see that if there were a control panel at the current registrar of record and the transfer were initiated there, you know, more information or more clarity could be presented to the registrant at that time, so that they wouldn't be necessarily filling up McKelly's inbox with all of these concerns about why they aren't able to complete the transfer, and causing you a bunch of pain and heartache. So just pointing out that this is somewhat an artifact of the way the system is designed. By initiating the transfer at the gaming registrar, there's that timeliness of the information that's lost.
Sorry, just coming back on you there, second, James McKaylee speaking. So you're looking at you're suggesting maybe moving to a system similar to that in CO UK, where you have to push the domain to the new registrar?
Nope, not making any proposals at this time, McKaylee, just pointing out that we're requiring or requesting more visibility in WHOIS because the gaming registrar or the new registrar doesn't have that information at that time. If that information were presented to the registrant when the transfer was initiated, if it were initiated at the existing registrar, that that might be a little more clearly understood.
Okay, I think. Chris and Mikey. Chris, is that hand a new hand or an old hand?
No, sorry, it's an old hand. I'll get it down.
That's okay. Mikey.
This is Mikey. I think that we've got kind of the classic data processing problem. We're making a single field, in this case in the WHOIS, do too much work. And maybe, you know, so this is supporting your point, McKaylee, that it would be useful to have a bit more visibility in WHOIS, and that the way to do that is to have two fields visible rather than one, or at least two. The one that's client delete prohibited could stay, and that could pop up when your customer is trying to transfer a domain from GoDaddy. Your systems folks could incorporate what that field tells you into the process. But then there's another field that's needed that tells about the kinds of locks that we've been talking about, the 60-day lock after a change of registrant. Essentially, it seems to me that there are internally initiated locks from the registrar, and that's the kind that happen after a change of registrant.
Mike, do you mind if I just reply to you?
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
No, just as a gaining registrar, what we've implemented is that if you try to transfer a domain to us where the domain is locked, our system will pick up on the fact that it's locked, well, within a few minutes or an hour or two or whatever, and send you an email saying the domain is locked, go talk to your current registrar.
Right, exactly. It seems to me that email may be too broad because...
Not really, no.
It could either be something that you're...
Well,
that, the other person initiated themselves, or it's something that their registrar initiated and they're unaware of it.
And yeah, so, but it's not. But as the gaining registrar, that's not my problem.
Well, but it is if you want to reduce the number of emails because you want to send the email to the right person.
No, I don't. But as the gaining registrar, I've informed you that the domain is locked. You should talk to the losing registrar about the lock. Because they're the only ones who are going to be in a position to either tell you what the lock is for or remove it or tell you how to remove it. I won't be able to tell you how to remove it.
Right, but I'm not a customer of the losing registrar, right?
Yeah, you are.
Not necessarily. If it, you know, this
now
is
you confuse
the
me.
Domain
now
sale
you confuse
transaction.
Me. Okay, with the domain sale transaction, it's a different conversation completely.
Oh, it is. This is only transferring from the same registrant to the same registrant. Just a transfer between registrars. No change of registrant is what you're talking
about. Yeah.
Well,
but it shouldn't be any different, really.
Well,
like if I buy a domain on CEDO, which you've registered and you have it, would say with Network Solutions.
Yeah.
Now, either I'm probably going to transfer to Black Knight because, much as I love Paul and Co, there's no reason why on earth I'd give them any money when I could give my own company money. So let's say if there's a change of registrant or not, I'm going to transfer it to my own registrar.
Well, but now there's two kinds of locks. There's the one that Paul might have put on. Let's talk about bar.com, my famous name. I mean, Paul and I have locked that thing up. You know, we have more chains and padlocks and nails on the door than you can shake a stick at. A lot of those are initiated by me. And so you need to talk to me to get those taken off. But there are some that if I went and changed the registrant info, he might have put a lock on it for 60 days because I changed my info, in which case you probably need to talk to me in a different way and say, hey, Mikey, you've taken all the chains and nails and stuff off the door, but Paul's got a lock on there that says, and you, Mikey, probably have to go tell Paul that it's okay to remove that, but it's a different conversation because it's a different kind of lock. See what I mean? It's the ones that are initiated by the registrar.
But as the gaining registrar, I won't see that lock. I'll just see it as being a knack.
Right.
I won't see the lock.
The point that I thought you were making, which is that you wanted to be able to see both kinds and make the distinction.
I don't want to make the distinction. I just want to be able to know so that no matter what kind of lock it is, I can push it back to you as the registrant, as the holder, as my customer, so you can go and sort it out with whoever you need to sort it out with.
Well, then I guess I'm with James. What's wrong with client delete prohibited?
I didn't say there was anything wrong with client delete prohibited. I'm going to go cry now in the corner.
I don't understand what your problem is, McKaylee. I thought I did, but no, I don't. I'm sorry. You don't have a problem.
I do.
Well, you have to describe it again, because I don't get it now.
No, the thing with the client delete prohibited is neither myself nor James are 100% sure whether that's what's happening or not, which is something we're going to have to follow up separately.
Well, while you're doing that, you might want to describe where the problem happens with the multi-email confusion.
If the domain is not, when somebody does a whois lookup on the domain and it is not obviously locked, there's nothing in whois to indicate that the domain is locked or that there is any issue with the domain.
And it still gets nacked.
Yes.
Well, I'm still back to my notion that situation must arise when it's not flagged client delete prohibited, because presumably you can see that for all domains, right?
Well, presumably, yeah, but I don't know if that's what's happening in all cases. If it is set as client delete prohibited, I presume that I'm not. Anyway, never mind. I actually don't know offhand. I'd have to find examples.
Yeah, well, I think that's what we need. We need cases. If I could channel Barry Cobb for a minute, I know he's on the call. You know, what we need is the various cases of problem so that we can tease them apart. And we need those documented.
Okay, then. Mikey, anything further on that point?
Nope, all done now.
Okay. Anything further on issue D at the moment? Okay. How about issue E, which is denial reason number 7. Domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status, which is probably in some ways related to part of the discussion we've been having in relation to issue D. We suggested clarifying the wording of the policy, the current policy, but if you actually look at the suggested wording, which is in the initial report, it's not particularly clear. Does anybody have any thoughts on this? James.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that the proposed language clarification language actually makes it worse, I think, and I understand this reason for denial even less. So my question to you or to the group would be, what are we specifically trying to fix here, and what's the best way to go about that, or should we perhaps leave this language alone if we're just clouding the issue even further?
Well, James, my understanding is that we clarified and made clearer things like timelines in relation to removal of locks. But the suggested wording is not very clear. So maybe we need to have another look at it and see if we can reword it or improve on it. Marika?
Yes?
I am correct, and my memory is correct, in that we were clarifying the period of the lock in this section, weren't we?
That's correct, because here we basically state that the lock must be removed within 5 calendar days of receiving a request.
Right, and that language is not in the current version of the policy, is it?
No, correct. What it currently says is a domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. And the new proposed language is, prior to receipt of the transfer request, the domain name was locked pursuant to registrar's published security policy or at the discretion of the registered name holder, provided that the registrar includes in its registration agreement the terms and conditions upon which it locks domains, and further that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registered name holder to remove the lock status. If the registrar does not provide a means to allow a registered name holder to remove the lock status themselves, then registrar must facilitate removing the lock within 5 calendar days of receiving a request from the registered name holder.
James?
Memory serves me well. I think that was suggested language that originated from the registry constituency.
Okay, thank you. James, and then Mikey?
Well, Marika already answered my first question, was where did this come from? The second question is, it looks like the first block of text here on this, we're changing a sentence into a paragraph, and it looks like the first bit is describing how the lock got there in the first place. And I think that, you know, if we're really going to make this a nice and tight reason for denial, shouldn't we just focus on how the lock is removed and what, you know, the standards or expectation for behavior are? And if we want to tack on the 5 calendar day requirement, that's fine. It seems like 2/3 of that language could probably be, thrown overboard without affecting the result. Or am I oversimplifying that?
This is Mikey.
Mikey?
I'm sort of running along the same lines, but I'm not sure that we need to throw it overboard. You know, Paul said it in the chat. This first sentence is just a bruiser. It needs to get split into at least two and maybe three. And then I think that the reason that I'm sort of making stuff up, so Barbara, you're probably a better one to help with this, but I imagine that what they're trying to accomplish with that first clause is to narrow the reasons and the circumstances under which it was locked. You know, to explain it. And, you know, what that begs is the question, well, are there other circumstances that are excluded by that? Then the middle part of that sentence is saying, darn well better have it in your registration agreement. And then the last part is the readily accessible and reasonable means to remove it. I mean, I think those are all three good ideas. They each deserve a sentence, I think. So I'm not sure that that we need to throw this out altogether. I think it does need a pretty intensive rework, but it seems possible to do that.
Marika, then James.
Yeah, this is Marika. I agree that with what Mikey says, because I read as well, you know, the introduction of the published security policy and the mentioning of the registration agreement as ways of addressing the readily accessible, so that registrants need know where to go for that information and how to do it. So that's how I interpreted that first part. So that was it.
James?
Yeah, so going along with what Mikey was saying there, I think we need to unpack this a little bit better. Perhaps some of this language can be moved into a definition, or we can break this up into separate, clearer reasons for denial, as opposed to trying to, as Paul said, make this the longest compound sentence in ICANN history.
Actually, there's a contest in that somewhere, or a pool, or a bet. I'll bet this isn't the longest one.
Mikey, I think this isn't online betting illegal in your country of residence.
I'd have to send some money over to your country to fulfill the bet.
I believe that both myself and Marika can take bets on this online. whereas most of the other people on this call, can't. Oh, Chris can.
As far as I know, yeah.
Beg your pardon, Chris?
As far as I know, I can, yeah.
I'm sure you'd be able to manage it. Okay, Michael Collins, go ahead.
I think I wanted to more clearly address a question that I have that may have been addressed by Mikey, and that's that because this says prior to the transfer request, the domain name was locked pursuant to registrar's published security policy or the registered name holder. So this is not necessarily just the discretionary. We're not necessarily talking about just the discretionary lock that the registrant put on it, but maybe one that the registrar has chosen to put on this. Would this, in effect, address the concern that we had for issue B, that if all locks could be removed in 5 days with the request of the registrant? I'm not sure that we want to eliminate. I've never really had a problem with a 60-day lock on a personal basis, personal level, and I wonder if 5 days is long enough to address a concern for fraud. Are we fixing the problem in D, but doing it in a way that leaves the security issue still unresolved? Thank you.
Paul Diaz?
Thanks, Michele. Yeah, I'd like to echo Michael's point in that just ask everybody as we discuss these things, let's also always be vigilant to the unintended consequences. The proposed text that talks about publishing security policies, I'm very uncomfortable with. At a minimum, want that more fully fleshed out, because if you set a standard very high where you have to have detailed description of what those security policies are, all you're doing is make it easier for the bad guys to figure out the ways to work around the security policies you put in place. You know, there are some extremely capable crooks out there, and they are constantly testing registrars' security methodologies. I mean, we've heard on the list from a former member, you know, that there's security is important, and you know, in some people's views, registrars don't do enough already to secure registrants' domain names. The last thing I think this group wants to do is put forward a proposal that is just throwing wide open the doors to the crooks.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Any other comments or thoughts? Would anybody like to volunteer to reword what we have here or to break it up into something a bit more manageable so that we can try to address, well, making the thing digestible, I suppose, and secondly, also addressing Paul and other people's concerns about the security policy aspect. Any volunteers? James?
Yeah, not quite volunteering yet, but I just want to possibly suggest a different plan of attack, which would be, while, you know, I think we certainly appreciate the registry stakeholder group putting forth some candidate language, I think that maybe we should circle back to determine exactly what parts of the original language need clarification and what the best way to break those out so that we don't have an unwieldy language here. And I think maybe starting back at the beginning might be a better approach than reworking what we have.
So you're suggesting that we start from scratch?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
On this particular point, yeah, I'm not saying throw this all out. I'm saying, you know, set it aside, revisit the objective of changing this reason for denial, and, you know, going then through that list of requirements and making sure that we can encapsulate that as well as possible.
Marika, then Mikey?
Yeah, this is Marika, and I think here that might be worth looking back at the issues report, because there was a previous working group, and maybe Mikey will want to comment on that, as I think he was chairing that group, that actually looked at this issue in greater detail. So it might be helpful to review what that group already discussed and the approaches they've already explored, as it might help the group forward in addressing the questions that James raised.
Mikey?
Yeah, this is Mikey. God, I hate it when I forget that I've been on working groups before. I had totally forgotten that. I think, wasn't that the drafting one? I think what we were doing on that one wasn't so much looking at the underlying policy as much as we were tweaking some drafting. But the point that I was going to bring up is I don't think that this language is actually that bad a start. I think that rather than having anybody volunteer to do it, Marika, if you could just go through and break up that first sentence into three, that it would read a lot more easily. The issue in terms of time, I remember that we discussed that on this working group. Sort of went back and forth a few times, and I can't remember either side of the argument there. But I'm not as keen as James on just tossing this all the way out. In terms of Paul's point, I think that we can, seems like we ought to be able to finesse that. I think the point that the language was trying to accomplish is no surprises. No. You ought to have something written down somewhere so that you as a registrar can't just arbitrarily lock things up. You've got to be doing it according to some pre-described published policy, but it seems to me that could be finessed so that the policy wasn't a manual for the bad guys to come in and steal things. But it seems like this isn't as bad a start as at least At least James thinks it is. So, you know, I would lobby for at least just chopping it into bits first and seeing if we can't.
Okay, Mikey, I'm going to have to cut you off there. What I would suggest, Mikey, is that maybe you and anybody else, if you want to just follow this up with some postings for this, that would be helpful. I'll allow Michael Collins to go ahead, and then we're going to call this a day since we're practically at the top of the hour.
Okay, I'll try to be brief. Thank you. Thank you, McKelly. I think to try and avoid confusing the D and E issues, which I'm just tumbling around in my head, is if we could clearly refer in this E issue to locks that are voluntarily placed by the registrant, not locks that are placed because of a registrant change or other fraud concerns, such that we might deal with those issues, the registrar placed security locks in issue D, and somehow only be referring to in issue E the locks that us registrants typically place on our domains. I think that those, you know, having a 5-day time limit to remove those is a reasonable thing. I think most of us are able to accomplish this online with registrars that I've always worked with. But if that's not the case, there should be some time limit then in which a voluntary lock can be removed. But I'd like to avoid confusing the D and E issues and just remove all of the security aspect, you know, the registrar security aspects from issue E.
Okay, thank you. Any other last final comments from anybody on anything? Okay. We won't be meeting for the next 2 Tuesdays. We will be meeting in 3 Tuesdays' time, whatever date that is. But the mailing list is still there at your disposal. So if anybody wants to raise any issues, and I would appreciate it if people were not to forget issue E, and let's see if we can actually make some progress on this and other matters on the mailing list. And just for the record, the next meeting is the 17th of August. Thank you, Marika. And for those of you who are taking a break, enjoy it. For those of you who aren't, well, welcome to the club. And I'll speak to you all on the 17th of August.
Thank you.
Thanks, McKaylee.
Thanks, McKaylee.
Thanks.
All right.